From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 19th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we give you a primary primer on the upcoming June 25th primary runoff elections.
Thank you!
With friend of the pod, Mayon Schechter of South Carolina Public Radio.
Oh, eureka!
That's the whole pod, folks. We got it for about 20 minutes and the wind-down section, okay? We got some big news in the wind-down section. You're gonna want to stick around. Speaking of the wind-down section, The Lead loves hearing from everyone. That's why we have a voicemail box set up so you can share your thoughts, your parenting advice for AT, some hot takes, some compliments, save the criticisms. 803-563-7169. We'd love to hear from you guys. Tell us what you're doing this summer, what you're up to, and more. 803-563-7169. You think I'm Brady? You guys donating? You gotta donate. If you're not calling the voicemail box, call 800-256-8535. Donate. We are in pledge drive right now. If you don't want to do it on the phone, do it online, southcarolinapublicradio.org. Your contributions to the ETV endowment help us stay on the air, folks. Don't you listen to the credits? And thank you. We are days away from the June 25th primary runoffs. That's right, folks. In multiple candidate races, those who did not get 50% plus one vote on June 11th are on the ballot on Tuesday. Now, you may be eligible to vote in a runoff if A, there is one in your U.S. House or State Senate and or State House district. B, if yes, then you have to make sure it is for the same party primary that you first voted in on June 11th. C, or three.
Three.
If you don't know whether this applies to you, visit scvotes.gov, go to the voters pull-down menu, and click Get My Sample Ballot. And you will find out if there is a runoff in your neck of the woods.
Three.
I can only do so much here from Columbia, folks. Now, there are 13.
One, three.
There are 13 races to watch on Tuesday, including several big ones. I'm going to list them, so bear with me, folks. I'm trying to give you a little recap here. The big one, though, is the 3rd Congressional District in the upstate for a Republican nominee to replace Congressman Jeff Duncan. And we got some big state Senate races as well, including the Republican race in Lexington County, Senate District 23, between incumbent Senator Katrina Sheely and Carlisle Kennedy. Over in District 26 here in the Midlands, Republicans will be facing off to see who will go up against Democrat Russell Ott in November since he defeated Senator Dick Harpulian. There's the wide-open District 35 seat on both sides of the aisle in the Democratically-leaning Sumter District that Senator Thomas McElveen is retiring from. There's the Democratic District 22 runoff to replace Senator Mia McLeod between Richland County Councilman Overture Walker and State Rep. Ivory Thigpen, as well as some upstate runoffs, including the Republican District 6 to replace Greenville Senator Dwight Loftus. That's a race between State Rep. Jason Elliott and Ben Carper. Over in District 10, Greenwood Republican Senator Billy Garrett is on the ropes as he faces Charles Bumgardner for his seat, as well as the possible return of Republican Lee Bright, who is battling State Rep. Roger Nutt for retiring Republican Senator Scott Talley's District 12 seat. There are also 4 House runoffs as well. We're not going to go into that. I know that was a lot, but I like to list as much as possible so y'all know what's going on now. Now you know. And to know more, I'm joined by Mayon Schechter with South Carolina Public Radio to look more, like I just said, we're going to look more at some of these races, including that big one in Lexington County. Mayon, welcome.
Always great to be here, Gavin.
The enthusiasm, you can sense it. Everyone knows we're still recovering from election night. I know how it's going. But Mayon, you are looking at Senate District 23, and that's a Republican runoff between Senator Katrina Sheely and challenger Carlisle Kennedy, who is a trial attorney. Sheely is running for her 4th term. She's held office since 2013 after she beat J.K. Knotts in 2012 in a district that Knotts basically drew for himself. And that was the same year when Sheely and some 200 candidates got tossed off the ballot over improper paperwork. Oh, I remember that. That was a mess. And so Sheely had to run as a petition candidate, but she won. And hard to probably believe, but at the same time, which wasn't so long ago, the 46-member chamber was all male. And Sheely's election win meant that the Senate finally would have female representation.
Yeah, and Gavin, that theme of female representation or lack thereof has really persisted throughout this particular primary. Currently, Senator Shealy is the longest serving woman in the Senate. That is very likely to have fewer women moving forward. She's one of currently three Republican female senators, and so far she's the only one who has, I guess you could say, survived her primary. Senators Penry Gustafson and Sandy Senn both lost their primaries. Senator Gustafson lost to Alan Blackman, and Senator Senn lost to House Representative Matt Lieber in her respective primary. Now, on the other side of the aisle, State Senator Mia McLeod, who was a Democrat and then changed parties to independent, she declined to seek re-election this year. And there is a currently there is a runoff for her seat between two men. Senator Margie Bright Matthews has no challenger. And then the newest senator, Tamika Isaac Devine, is likely to win her re-election this year. I talked to Senator Shealy in her office earlier this week, and we talked about the lack of female representation in the State House, but particularly in the State Senate. And she told me she was really devastated about the numbers.
You know, women are taking a hit because we think women should be able to, have just a little bit of control over our bodies. And that's not the right reason to do this. You know, one vote should not do that to us. But the fact that there will be no women on the Republican side of the aisle is really a sad state of affairs. I feel like the things I've done over the last 12 years to help children and women and veterans and the elderly, you know, just last year to get that new Alzheimer's Brain Health Center here, to get what we've done out at DJJ, what we've done for DSS, when I'm gone, there's nobody here to do that. I'm not saying that I'm irreplaceable, but I can tell you there will be, you know, 30, maybe 31 Republican men that are not going to pick up that mantle and run with it. And it will be a sad day for children and families in the state of South Carolina. And they know it, too. That's why my fellow senators are fighting for me. They want me to stay here. I mean, they're donating to my campaign. They're endorsing me on Facebook. They're doing everything they can do because I handle a lot of their work for them, too, when it comes to families and children. They don't, you know, they call me because they know that I have the compassion and the heart to handle that.
Maya, just hearing Senator Shealy right there, it sounded like what we heard from some of the other incumbents who lost. You know, we heard comments from State Representative Bill Sandifer over in the House, obviously not Senator, but he was over the very powerful LCI committee. And he had a comment in the Post and Courier saying, I hope Oconee County doesn't want anything anytime soon. To which we also said, you know, well, the Senate president is from Oconee County, so they're okay right there. But kind of just really listing like the power of incumbency when it comes to these lawmakers. And while some people say, oh, they've been there forever, well, it takes time to get things done. And like you heard from Senator Shealy, she's been there for 12 years, but she's doing a lot of stuff for a lot of people.
Right. And I think a little bit differently than Representative Sandifer's situation no longer representing Oconee County is that Lexington County, if Senator Shealy loses, Lexington County will lose a veteran senator in her, but they're also losing a veteran senator in Democratic Senator Nikki Setzler, who also declined to seek re-election this year and is the longest serving senator. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge hit for not only that chamber in terms of institutional knowledge, but also for a county because both Setzler and Shealy sit on the powerful Senate Finance Committee. And just even going back to Senator Shealy's work in the State House, I was looking at the legislation she's been able to pass that she's a primary sponsor on compared to folks like Senate President Alexander, Senate Finance Committee Chair Harvey Peeler, House Speaker Merle Smith, et cetera. And she is incredibly successful at passing legislation. And I'm not talking about resolutions, which are pretty low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. The bills that she passes, well, I have to say, though, with the caveat that these are largely issues that a lot of people can get behind. They deal with children. They deal with vulnerable adults. But just kind of going through some of the things she talked about, you know, she mentioned also Alzheimer's and the work she's been doing that. And that's obviously a very personal issue for her because her husband has it. Mm-hmm. And it's also a disease that impacts so many people, including here in South Carolina. You know, she mentioned her work over children, vulnerable adults, with families. She chairs a committee. She's the only woman in the Senate that chairs a committee. She mentioned she sits on the Senate Finance Committee, which is a very, very big deal. She also sits on JBRC, the Joint Bond Review Committee, which is also another money handling committee. But even beyond that, Senator Shealy has also gone head to head with governors over cabinet directors, which can be mammoth, you know, efforts, especially mm-hmm. when governors are very supportive of the individuals that they place there, whether it's been over the Department of Juvenile Justice or Department on Aging. But, you know, I have to say that, like, it's interesting as we talk about these primaries, and you mentioned Representative Bill Sandover, and there was also Representative Jay West, who mm-hmm. was the Assistant House Majority Leader. You know, success is viewed so differently now in election cycles. And just because somebody has been, quote, successful in the state house doesn't necessarily translate to on the ground. Here's more of the conversation with Senator Shealy.
I went head to head with Nikki Haley mm-hmm. over DSS. I went head to head with Governor McMaster over DJJ. And I won both times because I kept on and I kept on and I kept showing them what was wrong. But I don't mind facing, you know, a challenge. Mm-hmm. I don't mind speaking my mind even when people disagree with me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's better to just say it, and then you don't have to figure out what you said. I'm not going to agree with the governor just because he's the governor. I'm not going to agree with the speaker just because he's a speaker. I'm not going to agree with President Alexander just because he's the president, although I find little to disagree with him with. You know, the chairman of the caucus, we disagree on a lot of things, but we're really good friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I just tell you what's true, and, you know, we just have to agree to disagree.
So, Mylon, we just heard Shealy talking about the support she's getting from members, how she works well with people, and also fights back when she needs to. But when we're talking about support, though, and looking at this runoff, that support also includes money, it sounds like.
Yeah, and the state newspaper actually recently reported on this the other day that the GOP caucus was spending some $66,000 to help her. Hmm. And the caucus is also spending thousands more to support Senator Billy Garrett in his runoff and also State Representative Jason Elliott in his runoff for an upstate Senate seat. But as you know, Gavin, money is big. It's not everything. Shealy also told me she's got dozens of door knockers out. She knows that ground game is important. And frankly, I think what we've seen in some other primary elections is that ground game is incredibly important. If candidates aren't on the ground, they can lose mm-hmm. in districts that they've been representing for a while. We've seen ads. She's going after her challenger, Carlisle Kennedy, much more aggressively. But she's going to need to get voters out. She got the highest vote turnout in the primary, over 4,000 voters. But she needs voters who stayed home. And runoffs, as you know, can be very difficult for incumbents.
Yeah, because, of course, primaries already face low voter turnout. Runoffs, even lower. Like, it's right. A really big turnout game at that point. So, like you're saying. But, Maya, we'll be watching that race and some of those other races come Tuesday. And we'll have a full recap in next Saturday's podcast. But I just want to touch on the other big race that we'll be watching. That's the third congressional runoff between Sherry Biggs and Mark Burns. Biggs has McMaster's endorsement and Burns has Trump's endorsement, which is kind of funny because McMaster and Trump are such good friends. But this is a changing of the guard for the 3rd Congressional District because it's wide open since Congressman Jeff Duncan decided not to run for an 8th term after his wife filed for divorce, citing his relationship with a lobbyist and infidelities over the past 35 years of their marriage. Doesn't really go over well in those faith and value voters up in the upstate. William Timmons in the 4th Congressional District, he avoided some of that. I mean, it dragged him into a nasty primary, but he won. But again, this is one of 21 Republican congressional seats that are wide open this year, and it's brought out some big-name challengers, like we're saying, Sherry Biggs, who's a psychiatric health nurse practitioner and lieutenant colonel in the Air National Guard, and then Pastor Mark Burns, who former President Donald Trump, like we said, has endorsed, and he's been a big, big member of his campaign, big member of supporting him over the years, and is known for his controversial stances, too.
And also known for running. I mean, he's run for other seats several times, mm-hmm. and he's lost. So this is not his first election cycle in South Carolina.
That 4th Congressional District, talking about William Timmons there, too. And So just to kind of set the stage for that runoff on Tuesday, Burns did receive the largest share of the vote from the seven candidates. He got 33%, and Biggs got 29% right there. State Representative Stuart Jones with the House Freedom Caucus came in with 19%. And Senator Lindsey Graham's longtime now former communications director, Kevin Bishop, received 11%. So it'll be interesting to see where that support goes on Tuesday, because, again, like we're saying, Mark Burns, a pretty big bomb thrower. Sherry Biggs seems to be a little bit more level-headed. And some of those folks that we were just talking about are also maybe more in her camp versus Burns' camp, but that could split.
Right. And this goes, again, back to the ground game. I'm sure we're going to see some campaign activity between now and Tuesday's runoff. And, you know, Burns is going to have to work very, very hard to turn out voters. His percentage while he came in first was not very, very high, mm-hmm. which is not good in runoffs. I mean, it's not good for anybody in runoffs when you come in, you know, in the 40s or
below. 4%
below.
Ahead of the second place person. Like, yeah, he wasn't like 45% right. And everyone else is 20. Like, this is close.
Right. So he's going to have to touch. Every single voter that came out for him is going to have to show back up. And mm-hmm. so it'll be interesting. I don't know who his kind of biggest worker. I did see State Representative Stuart Jones, after he lost the primary, is now going to support Burns. But again, you got to have folks who are going to turn people out to vote. And mm-hmm. given the fact that the 3rd District, there are so many counties that are underneath that congressional umbrella, and there's also state house seats and some local seats. I mean, those people are going to show up to vote in those individual races. And so you just got to turn out those people again.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting as we wrap up this segment here, just looking at turnout, too, because, you know, we were talking about Congressman William Timmons, who is fighting for his 4th term in the 4th congressional district. But also after he won that, he went right up to Virginia for this big battle up there in the Virginia 5th congressional district, which is also dealing with the House Freedom Caucus. You had the leader there, the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Bob Good. And, you know, since the Freedom Caucus was really running against Timmons, Timmons was doing the opposite, supporting his opponent, John McGuire. So interesting to see how things trickle out in our regional and how everything's kind of connected when you start looking at Congress and how you want to shore up those alliances. And he said, you know, he didn't have any problems with Bob Good. It's just the tactics. And it's these tactics of the House Freedom Caucus, which mm-hmm. is what he was really attacking Adam Morgan on, too. So Timmons is back up there. We'll see who's going to be back up there in the 3rd congressional district come Tuesday.
It'll be interesting.
But, of course, there's still November, but it's a hard Republican district. So good luck out there for all those other candidates running outside of the 6th congressional district, mm-hmm. the Democrats. Thanks, Mylon.
Thanks so much, Gavin.
Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here. AT Shire produced the lead podcast. I'm glad you're here. I'm also glad.
I'm also glad
that
I'm not the only one here.
Not the only one. Mayon Schechter stuck around. We forced her to stay around. Mayon, thank you for sticking around.
My will, but I'm here.
We had a mini wind down before this, and I hope we can replicate it. It was the warm-up wind
down. He says mini because he doesn't know how long they normally go, but that was that was about 5 to 7 minutes longer than a normal one.
Mini.
But yeah, we're here. We're going to talk about something different than what we just talked about. If you want to know what we're talking
about, find it on our Patreon.
We talked about Theodore Rex. Look it up. Anyway.
Whoopi Goldberg. A no-nonsense future cop in 1995.
Exactly classic. Right. Anyway, Gavin, you have something you want to talk about. It's been grinding your gears, right?
You just did it.
What do you want to talk about here?
I want us to talk about phrases that we love to hate, mostly hate.
Mm-hmm. You're
I'm
talking
using
like
right there, yeah.
The little interstitial things that people say.
Mm-hmm. The things people say before they have to say something they really mean. Like, just say it. Like, we're in journalism. Be concise. Stop with the cliches.
Self-edit.
Please.
Self-edit.
So I'm going to start the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's one of them. Okay. You have some you have that you hate, right? Let's go.
First one I really hate is, I'm just saying. I'm just saying. What are you just saying? Are you saying? Are you trying to say something?
I'm just saying.
A very passive-aggressive way of saying, this is what I'm not saying. I'm just bringing it up.
No responsibility
for
this.
But you're saying it.
Yeah.
So don't stop saying, I'm just saying, folks. Just say it. Mayon, what are you just saying?
So there's two. I've got two.
Laid in.
One, at the end of the day.
Always looking forward to that.
At the end of the day, this is
a win-win.
A win-win.
Ugh, God.
And the other one that I you just sparked another one that I didn't even think about, but I know that I say this, and I know so many people say this to me, for the record.
Oh.
Well, yeah.
And it's already out in the record.
Yes.
We've been talking.
I might defend us non-reporters talking
sure.
to reporters. The idea of being on or off the record is tantalizing.
Sure.
You know, like, absolutely electric.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's our only chance.
But what
to
about
say
with
it.
Your friends?
That's,
for
yeah.
the record.
Yeah.
I want this on the record.
That
yeah,
goes hand in hand with what I was going to also say.
Part and parcel.
Which is vis-a-vis. which is To be honest with you,
oh,
I agree.
I'm sorry,
but were you not being honest with me before?
No, it was no offense, Gavin. It's a little annoying.
It was off the record.
Yeah. I'm not trying to dig anyone here because we all do it. I always subconsciously say, you know, a lot. That's my actual crutch. But other ones, I'm like, just stop.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean? At the end of every sentence, I sound like Beetlejuice after that.
You know what I mean? Hey, you know what I mean?
No offense, but you guys are both.
No offense, full offense.
No offense, full offense.
Don't take this the wrong way.
Literally, do not take this the wrong way.
Can I
ask you something?
No,
you can't.
Actually, no.
We're gonna let that sit there.
I don't know. Can you?
That's hey,
can you
do
go
you
to
have
bathroom?
A minute? No, I have no minutes. Mm. Sorry, just say it.
I hate it. When people say a whole nother, which is different. It's a different sort of thing. It's not like...
Well, it's a whole nother situation.
It's a whole other.
Whole other.
Let's not say a whole nother.
Is that even worse?
It grinds my brain into dust when I hear that. I can't stand that stuff.
This is one that I know we all do. I do this all the time, but it is always done in a professional setting. And I know everybody knows this.
Oh, what is
Are you busy?
Oh, yes, I'm busy. Please don't interrupt me.
And the moment you say it, it's like you've pinned the person up. Mm-hmm. You know, what are they supposed to say? But we all do it.
I can personally say that I never do that. I barge into rooms for the most
true.
Part.
That's true.
Also, the answering the phone. Hey, do you have a minute? Well, clearly, I answer the phone.
Right.
Like, hey, do you have a minute to talk? We're talking right now.
I just
now.
Answer. I go, yellow.
Yellow,
like everybody's dad. Yellow.
And I know we got listeners out there that have some that really grind their gears. So run up the flagpole, circle back with us, give us a shout, 803-563-769.
I was going to say, yeah, we are really getting area of corporate speak.
Oof, my favorite.
Some good synergy going on
synergy.
Here.
Synergy.
Oh, we can collaborate and capitalize and just
vertically integrate.
And just take this to the next level where we need to get.
Let's touch back on this, you know. Let's circle back.
Oh, I do that.
I need this by EOD,
but
okay?
I need this by DOD.
EOD.
Department of Defense.
It's
a whole different.
Say no more.
Yeah. But you do find yourself saying that kind of stuff more when you're communicating externally
mm-hmm.
with people, like people you don't know. You're like, you're trying to set up interviews. Okay, well, we'll circle back on that. I can't wait. Like, I do it just because I'm like, what else am I going to say?
It's a business language. It's a business language we all speak. And if you don't have a relationship where you can be less than business, then it's beyond work friends, which is, if South Spooky listeners knows, Gavin only... He only thinks of me as a work friend.
It was in that episode. That's not true. I was there for Rena's birth.
Oh, he was there.
And by there, I mean I was a text message away.
It's the same thing nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Gavin, we've reached the end of this. This is the back we've circled
the end
to.
This is the end of the rope
okay.
here.
We can no longer. There's no more vertical to integrate. Let's end this. Mercifully put me to sleep here. Okay.
And thank you for engaging with me.
Yes.
You know, I love that you both are here to engage.
Hey, debate me, Gavin. Hey, you owe me a debate. He's scared to debate me. Anyway, Gavin, end the episode.
And incorporate these ideas into a structure that is more facilitating of our vision here at The Lead, because it's all about vision and empowering.
Read the paragraph that you have to read at the end of every episode.
I don't like that you have to tell me what to do.
All right, well, I'm muting my mic and my
You my mic here.
Thank you, Mayan.
Thank you, Gavin.
For experiencing this with us. If you have something to say, say it at 803-563-7169. We want to hear what verbal crutches you despise, some corporate lingo that you love to use. 803-563-7169. You can always leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCTV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Early 2000s female artists, their songs were always like, is this thing on?
Did
you get that?
I got it.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I got it.
That'd be such a great kicker at the end.
We got it.